Órale, bienvenidos and welcome to the Familia FFP podcast. I'm your host, Jorge Martin, and today, vámonos otra vez. We're going back to Florida, and it's one of the most interesante teams this upcoming season, the Jacksonville Jaguars, and bringing us the insider look is John Shipley. He covers them for Jaguar Report and SI, Sports Illustrated. So we've been there. The Sports Illustrated folks have been really, really helpful in this beat writer series. So he's on the ground covering the team, giving some great in-depth, and we're going to get in-depth coverage, and we're going to get into a lot of that. But first off, John, welcome in. Bienvenidos. Thank you. Thank you again for doing this.
Hey, Jorge, thank you for having me, man. I appreciate your generosity immensely.
Oh no, this is awesome. You know, you've been so entrenched, you know, with the Jaguars, and you know, one of the things I think we got to start at the top, the coaching change to Urban Meyer. He's obviously one of the big names in football, not just college football, but football. Yeah. But obviously, it's the first time on the NFL stage. What you know? What have been your impressions, both from the coaching staff, the coaching change in general, but also just kind of like the early impressions on training camp? So that I don't go to the it's like a collegiate atmosphere, that cliche.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I feel like the big thing in general was Shaq Conn felt like the franchise needed a bit of a shot in the arm. You know, Doug Marrone, for, you know, all his merits and positives, and, you know, while the Jaguars weren't successful under him, while, you know, obviously he wasn't the main culprit, for all of that in consideration, he wasn't a guy who was going to get the fan base, you know, excited, or even really the locker room excited. So I really think, you know, Shad wanted to make this hire, you know, a hire that he could make his mark with and, you know, could look back and say this was the turning point in his tenure as an owner. And that's why I think, you know, he went as Forrest Links as to hire Urban Meyer, who, you know, somebody I said a few years ago, Urban Meyer would be coaching Jacksonville Jaguars. It would have been, you know, ludicrous. But you look at how the Jaguars are set up this offseason, you know, number one overall pick, plenty of cap space. And not just having a number one overall pick, but having it in a year where there's a bona fide prospect who people are like unanimously say should be the number one overall pick and have said that for years, then that's just the perfect situation for a leap like that. And there's obviously been issues with Meyer that I think are directly as a result of, you know, him coming straight from college. I think the whole Chris Doyle really fiasco was an example of Meyer not realizing that in the NFL, there's much, much more people, really higher powers than just the head coach. You know, at Ohio State, he could really get away with doing whatever he wanted on Ohio State's campus. In the NFL, you're just another head coach. You know, you are one of 32 guys, and the players really view you as such until you do something. You know, for all Urban Meyer won in college, he has yet to win in the NFL. And that's something that I think he, you know, has had to kind of learn. And, you know, I really think things like that are the things that he has to get a better hang of. Things like, you know, understanding that, you know, really just the difference between, okay, in college he had this expansive roster, which, you know, he had 3 to 4 people deep at the depth chart. But in the NFL, you're cutting it down to 53 people. So really, how can he best utilize, you know, such a smaller team? But it, just in terms of how they practice, I think that they've been significantly more intense and really more organized than I saw them at any point in practicing the last 2 years. I think once you've gotten him onto a football field, I don't think there's been any real sense of, okay, this is different from what he's been doing, or this is too much for him.
So I'm kind of curious. He's had a reputation as being an offensive guru. I mean, at Utah, he got them, you know, he turned Alex Smith into the number one pick in the draft. At Florida, he helped them win national championships with high-powered offenses. And obviously with Tim Tebow, who we'll talk about in a little bit. But at Ohio State, too, you know, obviously for fantasy, the offensive scheme, what is kind of like the thought process, kind of like looking into the crystal ball of what it's going to look like when the season rolls around?
Yeah, it's not going to be really completely, you know, what Meyer did at his past stops, because you have Daryl Bevel and Brian Schottenheimer, who are really kind of putting their own identities on the offense, especially Daryl Bevel, who is going to be the play caller. You know, Meyer's not going to call plays. I think that it's going to take a lot of Meyer philosophies, which is, you know, to really place an emphasis on running the ball. I think if the Jaguars see two high safeties, that they're going to be running the ball most of the time. So I don't think they're going to be this team that's spreading it out 4 to 5 receivers, you know, every play, and really throwing it bombs away. Like maybe a lot of people look at their receivers group and think that they could be with Trevor Lawrence. I think that they're going to be a team that, you know, wants to run it downhill and wants to do it often. And I think other things that, you know, Meyer's kind of philosophies that I think are going to be worked into, you know, what kind of Bevel and Schottenheimer schemes are, is I think, you know, setting up explosive plays in the passing game. So not being afraid to take your shots downfield. If you're not going to be throwing it often, at least, you know, make it worthwhile when you throw it. So I think a lot of deep passing, but a big emphasis on downhill running will be a big parts of their offense.
Well, let's talk about the passing game. I mean, you touched on him, the golden boy, the guy with the hair. On our show, we've occasionally taken to calling him Fabio Football. So, that's a good one. So, yeah, since he's not left-handed, we can't call him Sunshine from Remember the Titans.
Yeah. But,
Trevor Lawrence, I don't think there's been a more – how many times is the number one pick the quarterback? But I think he's kind of like risen above that level, kind of like to that Andrew Luck, Peyton Manning, that number one quarterback who gets talked about and expected. What have been the first early looks? I think some of your reporting has talked about the fact that he's really the one guy who's really taken shots downfield because he can. He has that arm. What is kind of early impressions, because of the fact that, you know, when it comes down to it, rookie quarterbacks do oftentimes struggle. I mean, Justin Herbert last year was a big anomaly, but, you know, what are some of the impressions and kind of how do you see him unfolding, you know, unlocking this offense?
Yeah, no, I think that, you know, his clear athleticism and arm talent is going to be able to really unlock the big play aspect of the offense. I think really, you know, from top to bottom, the offense is going to really, you know, benefit from that, you know, whether it's DJ Chark, Marvin Jones, Laviska Shenault. So I think just his natural ability to push the ball downfield. And like you had mentioned, he has been the only quarterback who's thrown downfield. Gardner Minshew, while he's had an okay camp, when he gets in there, his throws have mostly been 10 yards or shorter. When he's attempted to throw it downfield, it hasn't been very pretty. Jake Luton's thrown it downfield some, but it's ended up in the hands of the other team probably just about as often as otherwise. So as of right now, Lawrence is the guy who really unlocks the offense's full potential at every level of the field. He's obviously going to have his rookie moments where he struggles. I mean, you know, there was one practice on this week on Monday where he threw three interceptions in one period. You know, two plays were miscommunications where a receiver broke one way and he threw it the other way. And then another play was when he broke out of the pocket and threw it into a crowd near the sideline. Those are rookie plays you're going to see from him. You know, he'll have rookie moments in practice like that, and he'll have rookie moments, you know, throughout the regular season. But I really do think the highlights are going to outshine that because, I mean, just even on his bad days, he makes a handful of throws that make you go, wow, you know, that's something special that you can see will translate to Sundays.
And you know, so many people, and when it came down to draft day, I don't know how many times we saw that run against Ohio State. I think it was 2020. I think it was 72 yards. I mean, just absolute, just incredible play, incredible show of athleticism. You know, in fantasy football, we really love to see the running the quarterback who can run some. How much do you see it being kind of like him running? And we don't expect him to run like a Lamar Jackson as Lamar Jackson. But when it comes down to it, how much do you see the running game being a part for him?
I really do think you could see it to a lesser degree, maybe, though, of an earlier Russell Wilson, you know, who had Daryl Bevel, where, you know, it wasn't obviously like a Lamar Jackson, but they ran him more than some teams run their mobile. Like, they ran him more than, say, Cleveland, you know, runs Baker Mayfield today. So I think that you will see the Jaguars utilize his legs and his speed, whether it's on zone keeps or, you know, really any plays like that, and try to get him into space and the outside, because his athleticism, you know, when you match it up against the other starting quarterbacks in the league, you know, he's not going to be a Lamar Jackson or a Kyler Murray. There aren't that many other guys in front of him just in terms of pure, you know, straight line speed and explosiveness. And I think the Jaguars are going to attempt to take advantage of that because they have two coaches in Urban Meyer and Daryl Bevel who, you know, have shown in the past that they're not afraid to do that, especially in the red zone. I think when you get into the red zone, his ability to run can create a lot of mismatch problems just because, you know, defenses can really, you know, kind of be on their toes and not know kind of where the threat's going to come from. So it wouldn't surprise me if he scored, you know, say five rushing touchdowns this season. But if his rushing totals were maybe a little bit lower than that, but say he's somebody who makes the most out of his opportunities, I think it's definitely possible.
So that's very curious about him because, you know, there's a lot, there's obviously that thought that like the Bills use the way they use Josh Allen, and it's kind of, they're kind of similar in build. He's not as thick as Josh Allen, so you could see kind of like he's going to definitely be a factor in, like, you know.
I do think so. I don't think they're going to restrict him to just sitting in the pocket. Now, then again, I don't think they're going to, you know, make him the absolute focal point of the running game, but I don't think they're going to be afraid to use his talents there either.
And you mentioned Daryl Bevell, who is coming over from the Lions. And, you know, there he had a pretty good quarterback, too. I mean, it really sounds like from your reporting that he's really putting his stamp on this offense. Is that
correct? Yeah, no, absolutely. A lot of the things that, you know, you've kind of seen in his past offenses, you know, the use of the multiple tight ends, you know, lots of motion, things like that. It's things that, you know, the Jaguars offenses haven't really had in the last few years. You know, they've been bottom of the league in terms of motion rate before and after snap the last couple of years. I think that's something that you're going to see change dramatically in this year. And I think Bevell's a big part of that. And I think Bevell's impact goes, you know, even beyond the scheme. I think his impact's gone to the personnel. Urban Meyer said yesterday that Bevell has, you know, really earned his respect because, you know, the glowing recommendation he gave on Marvin Jones this offseason, everything Urban Meyer said that Bevell said has been correct. And he said Bevell had a big impact on the addition of him and Philip Dorsett. So I really do think he's a guy who has a big voice in the room. I think Urban Meyer, for, you know, all of his maybe faults, I don't think he's been unable to kind of accept the humility and accept that there are lots of things he don't know. You know, he doesn't know at this level. So I think he's been willing to, you know, kind of rely on Bevell as that veteran kind of experience on offense.
So let's go to the running backs. This is one of the more intriguing groups. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. I mean, it's confusing. James Robinson had a wonderful season last year. I mean, he was a revelation. He helped so many people get to the playoffs. Didn't help him win because he missed the fantasy championships with missing the last couple games of the season. But, you know, was such a workhorse last year. But then you bring in first-round pick, you grab the Jaguars draft Travis Etienne, and they'd already signed Carlos Hyde. How do you see kind of like the touches, not just the carries, but the receptions too? How do you see them getting kind of broken up this year?
I could see, I really think Hyde's going to be, at the end of the day, you know, the clear third back, kind of in a tier of himself to where his touches don't even approach the other two. Nothing that I've seen suggests to me that he's going to be a major factor in the offense, at least in comparison to Robinson and Etienne. But I could see Etienne out-touch Robinson this year just because I think he's going to be that much emphasized in the passing game. And that's not to say he's going to be spread out at wide receiver every play. Like, I know a lot of people love to, you know, to think after Urban experimenting him with in minicamp, but they view him as a running back who has the experience to excel as a pass catcher. So that's whether, you know, motioning out wide or, you know, catching routes out of the backfield or running screens. He's been extremely active in training camp to this point. So I really think Etienne is going to be a big part of the offense. I personally believe Robinson will get more carries and he'll be more of a focal point in the running game, especially, you know, as they try to set up our running games early on. You know, Robinson is just kind of a Meyer back. You know, kind of that gritty downhill, you know, kind of guy who can break tackles. The only thing he misses is that home run element of speed. And that's really why they brought in Etienne, is they missed that from the running back position. So I think it wouldn't surprise me to see Etienne get slightly more touches, but I don't think either him or Robinson are going to lap each other by any measure.
So do you think Robinson, though, takes a big back seat in the passing game?
I do think he probably ultimately takes one in the passing game. The saving grace for him at this point is he's a significantly better pass protector than Etienne. And so if he can, you know, kind of serve as the pass protecting kind of role, then I think you could see him stay on the field on more and more third downs. But otherwise, I would say ETN and creating mismatches with linebackers is going to be the kind of go-to third down alignment.
So that's really interesting, because you hear that so much with rookie running backs, that they're just that's the biggest, that's almost the greatest learning curve for them is just in the pass.
And you go out there and look at them. I mean, you know, ETN, even coming out of college, you know, one of his big knocks was pass protection. I mean, just the way he's built, you know, he is a slender running back. You know, he's that quick-hitting, dynamite type of runner, but he's not a guy who's going to, you know, stand up a middle linebacker at the point of attack, whereas Robinson is a lot more stout, a lot more, you know, low and built to the ground. So I think Robinson is going to be a guy that they can trust more, kind of with the steady carries. You know, he has been the best rusher during training camp. You know, he has the best feel for how the blocks are unfolding. But overall, I think ETN speed is going to be too much for them to leave off the field too often, because, I mean, it's showing up in camp, and he hasn't had any issues. I know there was a lot of, you know, opinions of him coming out of Clemson that, you know, he wasn't the best receiver despite, you know, his volume numbers. But he hasn't had any issues with hands throughout camp at all.
Yeah, he did. And he has. I remember seeing so much film of him at Clemson. I mean, he just has such incredibly quick feet.
He gets to his top speed extremely. Like, it seems like the second he starts, you know, moving in one direction, he's able to just accelerate. It's interesting to see in person. It really is.
Oh, it's incredible. That's why I love, you know, having you give us that you know, that from the field view.
Yeah.
The wide receivers are so incredibly, you know, intriguing. You've got DJ Chark, who exploded in 2019, had an uneven 2020. You had Laviska Shenault, who had a good closing to last season and is very intriguing. He's getting a lot of hype in the fantasy community this year. And then you've got Marvin Jones, kind of like that veteran who's, you know, I could see from your recent coverage that he's kind of showing them the ropes, kind of from the coming over from the Daryl Bevel offense. Can you kind of bring, is there an alpha dog in this group? Someone who's going to be a clear leader, or a lot of guys getting three guys getting a lot, still getting a lot spread targets?
I really think it's going to be three guys getting the ball a lot. I don't think there's a scenario, or at least nothing I've seen, that suggests to me that it's going to be any one guy dominating touches, because, I mean, I've seen all three different guys, you know, make big plays throughout camp. I'd say Shenault and Marvin Jones have probably been more consistent than DJ Chark throughout camp, with Shenault being the guy who, I mean, throughout camp, I can probably look at my notes from each day and I'll see Shenault's name, you know, next to a big play. It seems like, you know, from day one of camp, he's came there and he's kind of been, you know, a tough cover for any defensive back. Chark, though, has, you know, in their 2 days of pads, those have been his two best days of practice. So, you know, you really have three guys who are ascending. Jones and Lawrence seem to already have a really good connection with each other. So I think it's going to be three guys who really, you know, you kind of look at them week to week for different matchups, you know, just depending on the kind of defense and the personnel they're playing. Because I don't think as of right now it's going to be one guy who, you know, really dominates touches. I really think it's going to be a lot of, you know, riding the hot hand.
So DJ Chark, you know, he got, I think, has he been getting challenged to kind of become that? I mean, you mentioned that there's no clear leader, but is he being kind of challenged to become kind of that alpha dog, the main guy in this offense?
I think he's the guy who Meyer has taken the most vested interest in his development. You know, you see Meyer working with him before really almost every practice on the field, you know, the two of them working on releases together. Meyer, you know, earlier this offseason, you know, had publicly, you know, said what he had told the Chark candidly, which, you know, was, you know, some pretty direct comments about how he didn't think he played big enough, how he thought he played below the standard of what they looked for their receivers a year ago, which, you know, for all the issues at quarterback last year, all these things can be true. And to all accounts, though, Chark has answered that challenge. You know, he's came in the training camp a much bigger player. You know, it shows both on and off the field, really, you know, how his physique has kind of changed. And like I said, after a quiet first few days of camp, he's turned it on the last 2 days. He beat Shaquille Griffin on a couple different reps yesterday, and then he was uncomfortable on the first day in pads and one-on-one. So I think he's a guy who's getting better and better as he's kind of under Meyer. And like I said, he's the guy who Meyer has – invested really the most in right now, just because it seems like, you know, he knows Marvin Jones is a 10-year vet. He knows he doesn't need to really get that extra bit out of him. Laviska Shenault's a second-year guy who's coming off, you know, not a spectacular, but a strong rookie season. You know, he's not coming off a down year. Chark is the one that, you know, really needs to have it that little bit coaxed out of. And I really think that's been Meyer's kind of emphasis.
Do you think Shenault will still get some running plays, some jet sweeps, those kind of plays called for him?
I think he'll get some, but I don't think you'll see it nearly as much as last year. I think his role this year is going to be a lot more receiver driven. I really think that they're going to use him more primarily as, you know, kind of a true slot receiver, a guy who can kind of feast both underneath and downfield.
And I think one of your notes was how Marvin Jones is one of the, you know, clear touchdown leaders over the past couple of seasons. It's one of those underrated things that you find out, that you think about him. But he's one of those guys who's that veteran who's been around, I think it's 10 years now, and is not the sexy pick, but he still delivers, doesn't he?
Yeah. And he hasn't looked to slow down. You know, he's been incredibly impressive throughout camp. I mean, he's been probably Lawrence's to this point, his best downfield target. And not because he's the fastest guy on the team, not because he's the biggest guy on the team. You know, you look at him from perspectives of size and speed, and he's not as big as or fast as either Chark or Shenault, but he has incredible hands and ability to come down the ball in the air. And I really think just his ability as a possession receiver, which I think a lot of people look at Marvin Jones and kind of his stature and don't think he's a possession receiver, but that's exactly what he is. And I think he's going to be Lawrence's kind of security blanket.
Oh, man. Well, a lot of times for rookie quarterbacks, the tight end is the security blanket, and
not in this case.
Well, this would not be complete without a question about Tim Tebow. You know, the transition to tight end. James O'Shaughnessy is there too. You already started off your answer. Please feel free. Por
favor. Yeah, no. Really, the Jaguars, they have their six tight ends split into two different groups. You know, one are the Y tight ends who are going to be really the inline blockers, you know, the kind of extension to the offensive lines. And the other are the F tight ends. And there they have James O'Shaughnessy, Ben Ellison, and Tim Tebow. O'Shaughnessy has been hurt for most of training camp, so it's really been Ellison and Tebow getting the majority of the reps. But if, you know, you ask me which guy's kind of done the most with those chances, it's Ellison. And it's not really close to this point. Tebow made a couple of nice grabs early on in camp, but it needed to be remembered that the defense wasn't closing on the ball. You know, you might remember the Jaguars, they got fined in OTAs and lost some OTA practices next year for OTA violations. Their violations were they had too much physical contact during offseason practices. So for the first few days of training camp until they got, you know, shoulder pads on, defensive backs weren't allowed to close on the ball. You know, they were trying to kind of limit unintentional contact. So Tebow was catching the ball fine to a degree there. But really, once the live bullets started flying and defenders closed on the ball, he's had a problem really corralling it and catching it. And to me, it looks like there's a tight end on the Jaguars roster to kind of look at as kind of a young project, you know, for them to develop behind O'Shaughnessy. You know, not obviously Tebow's not young, a project to develop behind O'Shaughnessy. I would say it's Ben Ellison because he's done a lot more to take advantage of those snaps.
Okay, well, let's go over to the offensive line. You know, they are going to be charged with, you know, guarding the king, you know, the prince. Yeah. It's we saw what happened in Cincinnati with Joe Burrow. I'm sure that Jaguars fans do not want to see that. Fantasy players don't want to see that happen again. This is a group that not highly rated by Pro Football Focus. I believe they were number 23 going into the season. But it's a group that's remained intact, and it's a young group. What, you know, you gave such a great breakdown on some of the offensive line in the drills on your day seven training camp recap. Can you kind of crystal ball this group as a whole?
Yeah, no, it would surprise me if their starting five in week one wasn't the same that it was last year or, you know, the year before. They've had the same, you know, starting five linemen, you know, Cam Robinson, Andrew Norwell, Brandon Linder, AJ Can and then Jawan Taylor, right tackle. That's been their combination for the last couple of years. And really their thought was, you know, okay, under Urban Meyer and under a new scheme and another year under George Warhop, they think that a line that they thought coming into this offseason was a bit underrated, could get better. Really their thinking was that they were strong along the interior, which I would actually agree with. I thought Norwell and Can had strong years last year. I actually thought last year was the best year of Can's career and the best year Norwell had as a Jaguar. And then Brandon Linder, when healthy, he's a top 5 to 6 center in the NFL. You know, his issue has been staying healthy. He's only played one 16-game season. But overall, you know, when healthy, the Jaguars, they don't need to worry much about their interior. What they've had to worry about is their offensive tackle spots. And so far, Jawan Taylor has answered the challenge at right tackle in camp. He's had a really strong camp. Like if you had to ask me which one of their five veteran offensive linemen has had the best camp, I would say Jawan Taylor. And then on the left side, you have a really interesting situation because you have Cam Robinson. You know, he was franchise tagged. He's one of the highest paid left tackles for this season because of that. You know, he's a fourth year veteran who has years and years of experience on the left side. You know, the conventional thinking is a veteran protecting your rookie quarterback makes more sense than a rookie left tackle. But Walker Little, the number 45 overall pick, he's been a tremendous throughout camp. He does not look like a guy who hasn't played a football game in 2 years. And Urban Meyer had a comment yesterday that Little's been better than he thought he would be, and he thought he would be really good. And that's everything that the Jaguars have said publicly and privately shows that they're thrilled with his development so far. And I mean, in one-on-ones, he's kind of been that kind of unmovable wall that, you know, defenders just have not been able to get past. So it remains up in the air when Little can surpass Robinson, but I don't think it's a matter of will he. I think it's more of a matter of when he.
The defense. We're going to close up the football questions on the defensive side. It was a group that was very much maligned last year. Number 31 against in points scored. It was having problems rushing the passer and defending against the pass, against the run, everything. Where do you, with so much investment on the offensive side of the ball in the draft, where do you see the unit for this year?
Yeah, it's going to be a unit in major transition just because, I mean, ever since from 2013 through last year, the Jaguars, they ran the same, you know, 4-3 under scheme that, you know, really was based out of Seattle, you know, under Gus Bradley and then under Todd Wash, who was, a Bradley disciple and who led their defense the last couple of years. This year, their defense is going to be completely different. Joe Coleman's leading the unit, and he's bringing a scheme that's going to resemble the Baltimore Ravens defensive scheme. You know, it's going to be a lot more multiple. It's going to be, you know, more 3-4 looks, more looks of, you know, the edge rushers kind of dropping in the coverage, and then pressure coming from different spots, such as the safeties or the linebackers. So I think it's a unit that the Jaguars expect to be better, in part because they're going to be playing a smarter brand of football. But I also think it's a unit that the Jaguars, you know, they made big investments in the defensive line, in the secondary. They have two of the league's highest paid linebackers in Miles Jack and Joe Schobert. So I think the defense has a chance to get closer to average this season. I think it's probably another offseason of adding pieces away from getting better in that. But I think if you can get the average after a year that like last year, I think you consider that a win.
All right. Well, last one, it's kind of a fun one that I love to ask. Can you, tacos. So everyone, you know, tacos are like pizza. Everybody loves them. Where can you get, what are some of your favorite types? And, you know, can you get a good taco? Can you get good tacos in Jacksonville?
Oh, you can get lots of good tacos in Jacksonville. Jacksonville has, you know, a great scene of it. And really, this area in Florida in general, there's a spot called Maria Chile's. That's my favorite one. But my personal favorite is chorizo tacos. I really think, you know, put whatever you want with it. It can't go wrong.
One of my absolute favorites. Oh, yeah. This is awesome. This is awesome. Now, John. Juan, as we like to say in Espanol, yes, fue un gran placer. This was awesome. I really appreciate you your time on this and for the insight. Can you let us know where everybody can find your great work?
Yeah, you can go ahead and find the site. It's si.com/NFL/Jaguars or Jaguar Report. We're at training camp practice every day. So, you know, we provide our notebook every single day from practice, along with, you know, other stories, you know, that we've, you know, kind of uncovered, or other stories, you know, from people we talk to. And then on Twitter, you can find me at @John_Shipley.
Oh, thank you so much. Gracias.
Hey, thank you, Jorge. Appreciate it, man. Thank you.
And familia, eso es todo for our show. Thanks again to Anchor for being our hosting network on the audio side, and to YouTube to being our host on the video side. Please make sure to subscribe. You can find us on the audio side. You can find us at Apple, Google, Spotify. You can also find our original content at familiaffb.com. You can find me at JorgeMartin17 on Twitter. And you can find us at familiaffb on Twitter and Instagram. Otra vez. Thank you so much, John, for joining us.
Thank you, Jorge. I love that. Thank you, man.
This is awesome. And familia, remember, todos somos familia. Salud.